les podcasts
de Blast.
Dans les rues de Tel Aviv, avec Donald Trump, en arrière-plan, le drapeau américain et ce message. Thank you, Mr. President. Merci, Monsieur le Président.
I mean, Bibi would call me so many times. Can you get me this weapon, that weapon, that weapon? Some of them I never heard of, Bibi, and I made them. And you obviously used them very well. The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip. We'll own it. But we have to do what we have to do. We make the best weapons in the world, and we've got a lot of them. And we've given a lot to Israel, frankly. And...
Medea Benjamin, bonjour.
Bonjour.
Comme je l'ai dit, vous êtes une militante politique américaine. Vous êtes notamment membre du mouvement Code Pink. Alors, depuis 2 ans, on peut dire que votre engagement, il est tourné vers le génocide en cours à Gaza. À l'heure où on réalise cet entretien, les négociations sont en cours pour le plan qui a été proposé par Donald Trump. Hein. Les négociations sont en cours entre les États-Unis, Israël et le Hamas. Un plan qu'il faut le dire pour le moment a été accepté par le Hamas. Comment vous l'analysez ?
We don't know where this plan is going. There are things in the plan that are absolutely ridiculous. The idea that Donald Trump and Tony Blair would be in charge of a new Gaza makes no sense to anybody, and Palestinians would never accept that. But there are other things in the plan that might go forward. We also know that Israelis never respect anything. Any ceasefire that they have agreed to, they have violated. So I don't think people have confidence in this. But it's interesting still that Donald Trump felt pushed to negotiate a ceasefire. And my analysis of that is that he is receiving a lot of pushback from the Arab countries. He is receiving a lot of pushback from his own base. And this is something that's not talked about a lot, but I think it's building up and building up, that there are many Republicans who are saying, why do we keep supporting Israel? And that pressure is starting to percolate up from the bottom. And I think it's one of the reasons that Trump is looking for something that would be allowing the U.S. to stop full support of Israel. Of course, he also says he wants a peace prize. And so these are some of the reasons, but I don't think that this particular plan makes any sense.
Alors, vous parlez de pression à l'encontre de Donald Trump. Est-ce que vous pensez que ces pressions peuvent venir de la communauté juive américaine? Puisqu'on a lu là, dans un récent sondage du Washington Post, alors que 61% des juifs américains estiment qu'Israël commet des crimes de guerre et 39% disent que les actions d'Israël constituent un génocide.
It's very interesting, these new polls that come out showing a large number of Jewish Americans that don't agree with Israel. This is a sea change in the Jewish community. I mean, there were always leftist Jews, I mean, myself, but we weren't a significant percentage. And now it is a significant percent. And I think a lot of the Jews are seeing that what genocide is not good for the Jewish people, whether it's people living in Israel or Jews living anywhere. But I don't know that that's a significant push for Donald Trump. I think it's more significant that the Christian Zionist base is also starting a little bit to question. There are some Christians, in the Republican Party, that are now, like one congresswoman, Marjorie Taylor Greene, she is very Christian, and she has come out very much against what Israel is doing. And one of the reasons is that she is communicating with some of the Christians in the West Bank who are explaining that Christians are being hurt, not just in the West Bank, but the few Christians that are left in Gaza as well. And that's interesting, you know, it's a minority population, but it is getting some of the large percentage of Christian Zionists in the U.S. who are almost all Republican to start questioning whether we want to keep supporting Israel.
Alors, pour ceux qui nous écoutent, est-ce que vous pouvez nous expliquer qu'est-ce que sont les chrétiens sionistes, ce que vous appelez les chrétiens sionistes? Parce que bon, Israël se défend comme étant le pays du peuple juif. Pourquoi des chrétiens soutiennent Israël aux États-Unis?
It's really crazy, this Christian Zionist group. I never realized before 2 years ago how big they were. They're huge. There's one organization called Christians United for Israel. And they claim 10 million members. And I don't doubt it, because they have meetings that have thousands and thousands of people coming to them. They are very powerful, not so much from the point of view of money, like the Jewish lobby gives a lot of money, but the Christian lobby has a lot of voters, and they are fanatical about Israel. I mean, they say that the Bible tells us to love Israel no matter what, and that Israel is going to be the place of the second coming of Christ, mm-hmm. that there will be this Armageddon, and those who survive are the ones who believe in Christ.
Are you really okay with the slaughter and the starvation of children in Gaza? Is that really something that
you
are
really
okay
with?
Really
to what they did
are
to
you
the
okay
Jews and Israel?
And this fanatical religious viewpoint is not only from the base, but it's the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee. He is a fanatic Christian Zionist who says there's no such thing as Palestinians. So this is a very important pressure point that I don't think many of us realized was so strong. And now a lot of the work that we must do is to try to get inside of this Christian Zionist movement and make them go back to Christian principles of thou shalt not kill, of love thy neighbor, of blessed are the peacemakers, and change some of the minds of these millions of Christian Zionists who continue to support Israel.
En opposition aux chrétiens sionistes, on a l'impression que dans la jeunesse juive américaine, la propagande israélienne prend de moins en moins.
I'm one of your Jewish constituents. Yeah. Enough is enough.
You're not.
Stop the genocide now.
Stop the genocide.
Est-ce que vous pensez que ça peut influencer les États-Unis vis-à-vis de leur politique à l'encontre d'Israël?
Within the Jewish community, the young people don't have this attachment to Israel. I mean, I'm old, I'm 73, and my parents were very attached to Israel. We used to give money to Israel all the time. Every holiday was a time to raise money to plant trees in Israel, things like that. My children now have no attachment to Israel at all. And that's what you see in these changing generations, is that the young people don't have much attachment to Israel. Even if they have some attachment to the Jewish religion, they still don't associate it necessarily with Israel. But this is true among young people in general, not just among the Jewish youth. Young people, in every opinion poll, the vast majority of young people overwhelmingly are not supporting of Israel. And this is one thing that gives me hope for the future, which is, you know, they will be the future politicians. They will be the future ones determining policy. So it is good sign for the future that young people don't have this attachment to Israel.
Alors, comme je l'ai dit, avec votre mouvement Code Pink, vous avez immédiatement pris position pour Gaza et pour la fin du génocide en cours. Et on l'a vu aux États-Unis, plusieurs militants universitaires et journalistes critiques d'Israël et de sa politique ont été censurés ou sanctionnés. Est-ce que vous, c'est quelque chose que vous avez vous-même expérimenté, la répression?
The repression against people who have been in favor of Palestine has been intense. We saw with the encampments in the colleges how they were just joyful, they were beautiful, they were an example of Jews and Muslims coming together, doing their prayer services together, protecting each other, and non-religious I mean, mostly non-religious. And it was a time that young people were really learning more than they were learning in their classrooms. You know, they were learning from each other. And, you know, that in itself, I think, was something that was threatening to the powers that be, because you saw them having teach-ins every day about capitalism, and this is not the kind of world we want to live in, and really becoming radicalized through all of this. But the crackdown came from the government, Trump's administration, demanding they crack down on these students. And the crackdown was fierce, not only in the way that police dismantled the encampments, but also the way the students were expelled from the university. Some of them who were supposed to be graduating weren't able to get their degrees. And then some of the foreign students who were threatened with deportation or actually taken into prison. And then there was the crackdown on the professors as well. Many of them were fired. They were threatened. They were forced to change their curriculum. This isn't even private institutions, not just ones that got money from the state. And one of the things that the government has done is pulled or threatened to pull large amounts of money that these colleges were getting for important research, research into things like cancer and Alzheimer's. And, you know, the universities are the place where we need this kind of research, and the federal government threatened to take away that money. They also had very prominent hearings in Congress where they brought the deans, the heads of these universities, to be grilled by members of Congress. And then based on their answers, these university heads, these presidents, were forced to resign. And this sent a message out to many other university presidents. So the repression of the students has been intense. But it's not only the students or the universities. It's also the lower grades, even elementary school and high school. There were professors, teachers that were threatened or lost their jobs. There were students punished at high schools for doing things like walkouts. And then in jobs in general, I mean, people lost their jobs all over and continued to lose their jobs for simple things like posting social media or reposting somebody's tweet that then became a big problem for them. And that repression continues, and the government is doing everything it can to silence people. Mm-hmm. And the Jewish community that is pro-Israel is also doing things like buying up TikTok so that it can stop the content being more open and what they consider pro-Palestine. So it's a very sad time in the United States when we are losing our freedom of speech.
Alors, vous venez de le dire, cette répression à l'encontre des discours pro-palestiniens est incarné aujourd'hui par Donald Trump. Hein. On dit que Donald Trump mène une politique populiste autoritaire. Est-ce que c'est vraiment le cas? Est-ce que ça a vraiment changé avec l'élection de Donald Trump? Ou est-ce que c'était déjà le cas sous Biden? Est-ce qu'on peut parler plutôt d'une politique plus globale qui vise à criminaliser aux États-Unis tout discours qui ne va pas dans le sens qu'on voudrait?
I think that Biden administration paved the way for what we see with Donald Trump. The Biden administration was 100% pro-Israel and also tried to silence voices that didn't agree, especially within his own party. This allowed for Donald Trump to come in. I mean, some analysis showed that Donald Trump won the election because some analysis says that Kamala Harris lost the election because she refused to distance herself from Joe Biden's position on Israel. But this 100% support of genocide and suppression of opposing views in their own party paved the way for Donald Trump. And Donald Trump then has very authoritarian tendencies. He took advantage of this situation to not only continue Biden's policies on Israel, but to intensify the repression against those who didn't agree with them. And Donald Trump, I think, is much stronger a leader than Biden was, and much more able to maneuver the institutions in the United States, like even the courts. And so we're seeing that play out now. But I think many of us blame Biden for the position that we're in.
En France, quand vous prenez position pour la Palestine et que vous prenez aussi position contre donc la politique israélienne, vous pouvez être taxé d'antisémitisme. On a même un projet de loi qui a été présenté par le gouvernement qui vise à taxer d'antisémitisme toute critique du sionisme.
Aujourd'hui, on voit que l'antisémitisme, il a évolué, il a changé, il s'est renouvelé. C'est la question de la haine décomplexée d'Israël, c'est la question de l'antisionisme, et peut-être que ça supposera qu'on change la loi.
Est-ce que c'est la même chose aux États-Unis?
In the United States, it's terrible the way that they're trying to conflate the two issues of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. We see this in the way they have attacked the universities and called them anti-Semitic. We see this in Code Pink ourselves, the way that we are called anti-Semitic. And it's funny when a congressperson calls me anti-Semitic and I say, well, I'm Jewish. And they say, well, then you're a self-hating Jew. But they have now, there's organizations that are outing people as anti-Semitic, putting them in a list in the internet and making it as if these people should not be hired by anybody because they're anti-Semitic. There are examples of what is called doxing, but it's kind of outing people as anti-Semitic. Even these poor students, they put their pictures on traveling trucks. And they say, you know, these students are anti-Semitic. I mentioned these hearings that happened in Congress. We have had 14 hearings on anti-Semitism. And people are coming from all of these universities to talk about the problems they have had in school. And they'll say things like, there was a poster on the wall in the dormitory that I thought was anti-Semitic and it made me feel terrible. You know, this is an example of the growing anti-Semitism. Things that are small have been built up as things that are very big. Of course, there have been some terrible things. I mean, people have been killed in the United States at synagogues. There is anti-Semitism, I'm not denying that. But anti-Semitism is growing because of the genocide. And we say that there is tremendous Islamophobia in the United States. There is tremendous anti-Arab sentiment. There is tremendous sentiment against the pro-Palestinian community. And yet, we can't get our Congress to hold one hearing about that. We can't get the mainstream press to talk about it. They only want to talk about anti-Semitism. And that has been a big problem. And as long as the Israeli policies continue the way they are, you will see more anti-Semitism. And you see it now with Israelis that travel on an Israeli passport. They are not being allowed into some restaurants to eat. Their cruise ships are not being allowed to dock.
Mais est-ce que c'est pas plus des positions anti-israéliennes que de l'antisémitisme? C'est plus...
So that's an example of sanctions against Israel. But it means that anybody who is Israeli is going to be caught up in this. And some people then define that as anti-Semitism, rather than as they are representatives of a government that's committing genocide.
Alors, sur le rôle des médias, c'est très important, hein, parce que nous, en France, si vous voulez, la majorité des médias mainstream sont partisans de la politique israélienne. On invite souvent sur les plateaux des gens qui n'y connaissent pas grand-chose pour commenter les actions d'Israël, qui n'y connaissent rien en droit international. On invite aussi beaucoup le porte-parole de l'armée israélienne qui vient étaler la propagande israélienne sur les plateaux français. Alors, la situation aux États-Unis, comment elle est ? Est-ce que c'est mieux ? Est-ce que c'est pire ? Est-ce que c'est la même chose ?
I think that it's the same thing as in France, where the US press is the mainstream press is so pro-Israel, has always been so pro-Israel. They have Israeli spokespeople being on the TV, talking about Palestine without a Palestinian talking about it. They have op-eds in the newspaper written over and over again by pro-Israeli points of view. And then maybe, you know, they'll slip in something that's a little pro-Palestine to try to be balanced. But they are not balanced. They reported what happened on October 7th, just like the Israelis told them to report. When some of that reporting was proven wrong, like the use of rape as a weapon on October 7th, they never really retracted what they said. They talked about the babies being beheaded and being burned in ovens, and when that was proven not to be true, they didn't retract that. They continue to show the point of view that Israel has the right to defend itself. And maybe they make mistakes here and there, but continue with that same perspective that Hamas started all of this. It all started October 7th. It's Hamas's fault that so many civilians are being killed because they use them as human shields. So it is quite remarkable when we talked about the opinion polls being now more in favor of Palestinians than Israelis, that this is despite the pro-Israel stance of the mainstream media, because especially for young people, they're not getting their information from Fox News or from ABC or even the more liberal MSNBC. They're not getting their news from the Washington Post or the New York Times. They're getting their news from social media, and so they're seeing things that are closer to reality. It's interesting that the New York Times has put out some good investigations, but it's so after the fact. It's like a year later. Not that long ago, they put out a long piece where they interviewed over 100 people about what are Netanyahu's reasons for keeping this war going, and concluded after this long investigation that it was in his personal interest not to be tried for corruption. And, you know, everybody knew that, but it took the New York Times so long to come out and say that. And the same thing for the issue of civilian casualties. It took them so long to finally do a piece that went into depth about the civilian casualties.
Est-ce qu'ils utilisent le mot génocide ou pas?
They don't talk about genocide. They never mention. They might quote somebody talking about genocide, but they don't talk about genocide. And most of the people in Congress, for example, there are 535 members of Congress. I think there are 15 who've even mentioned the word genocide.
Justement, vous avez parlé du Congrès. Qu'est-ce qui fait que, selon vous, que la politique américaine soutient tellement Israël ? Alors, il y a cette fameuse question des lobbies, notamment de l'AIPAC, l'AIPAC qui est un mouvement pro-israélien qui finance les partis politiques américains. Est-ce qu'il est si important que ça aux États-Unis ?
I think AIPAC is extremely important. AIPAC has existed for a long time and has perfected the role of a lobby group, which is not just to give money, which it does, and it gives a lot of money. It spent over $100 million in the last midterm election and spends even more than that in presidential elections. But it's also a lobby that does two other things. One is that it scares members of Congress. It forces them to take a pro-Israel stand, and if they don't, they will be targeted. They will find somebody else to run against them, and they will destroy the careers of the Congress people who have done something, even sometimes a little thing, to show some sympathy for Palestinians. And this is way before October 7th. They've been doing this now for decades. But also, they force members of Congress to go to Israel. If you don't go with them on their trips, that's seen as something that is a strike against you. And they want to take all the freshman members of Congress, meaning the new members, and get them immediately to Israel on a propaganda tour. Now we find out that half of the freshmen in the Democratic caucus did not go on their last trip. And that was because of pressure from their constituents. But AIPAC has always brought people to Israel, not just on the people on the national level, on the local level. In fact, just about a month ago, they had a huge group of about 250 locally elected officials in the United States in Israel. So that's one other thing they do with these propaganda trips. And of course, they don't go to meet with Palestinians who are fighting the Israeli policies. They meet with very select people. And the other thing AIPAC does is it is well organized in the districts. So there was once a very interesting interview that one of the very few Republican members of Congress who oppose Israel's policies, Tom Massey, said in an interview with someone who used to be very right-wing pro-Israel and has now changed, that's Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. And Tom Massey said that every member of Congress has what he called a babysitter.
Everybody but me has an AIPAC person.
What does that mean, an AIPAC person?
It's like your babysitter, your AIPAC babysitter.
So somebody from AIPAC who is assigned to that member of Congress who watches closely every move that member of Congress makes, who makes sure that that person is consulting with him on what position to take. So they are very embedded in our government. And that has been something that we have been fighting against now and trying to change.
Alors justement, vous avez parlé de leur influence auprès de tous les politiques, hein, aussi bien au niveau local que national. Il y en a un dans le paysage médiatique américain dont on parle beaucoup ici en France, hein, Zoran Mamdani, qui lui, justement, semble prendre des positions qui vont à l'encontre de ce qu'on entend beaucoup de la part des dirigeants américains, notamment sur la question palestinienne, puisqu'il n'hésite pas à parler de génocide en cours à Gaza.
Universality and international law is also the same set of beliefs that have led me to describe what's happening in Gaza as a genocide. Because what we see...
Est-ce qu'il symbolise réellement un changement dans la politique américaine?
I think the primary election of Zoran Mamdani in New York City, where he has a very good chance of becoming the next mayor of the largest city in the United States, the city that has the largest number of Jews in the world after Tel Aviv, is just remarkable and is throwing the pro-Israel people in a tantrum because they're trying to see what can they do to stop him from becoming the mayor. And this is not just Republicans like Trump who are saying, I'll take away the federal money from New York City, but also Democratic leadership who still has not endorsed him, even though he won by a significant margin in the primary. And so this is a major, major break in the U.S. electoral politics, where somebody who is so pro-Palestine, even to the point where when he was a state representative, he had come to Washington, D.C. to organize a hunger strike against the genocide. That's how pro-Palestine he is. And to have somebody like him who will probably be the next mayor is very, very significant. And one of the things that we are seeing even now before the election is many people throwing their hat in the ring to be candidates in congressional races, in local races, because they see Mamdani won in the primary. And they say, ah, well, maybe I can win too. So every day we are seeing new people saying, I am challenging this pro-AIPAC person in Congress. I'm challenging this pro-AIPAC person in the state legislature. I'm challenging this pro-AIPAC person in our city council. So I think we're seeing a lot of change.
Et alors justement, est-ce que vous avez de l'espoir pour l'avenir des États-Unis ou vous pensez que non, ça va aller de pire en pire?
I think things are going to get worse in the United States before they get better. I think Trump is on a roll of repression. I live in Washington, D.C., and when we go outside of our house and walk just around the block, we see armed troops, National Guard troops, patrolling our streets. I never thought I would see armed military in our streets. And now, against the will of local people, he's sending them to places like Portland, Oregon, to Chicago, Illinois, and is threatening to send them in other places. And we just saw when he brought 800 generals to the United States to talk to them, he talked in these terrible terms about the war within, the domestic war, and that he was going to be sending the military to U.S. cities to practice on us. So we also see the thuggish way that this newly increased immigration agency called ICE is functioning in our neighborhoods. Terrible, terrible examples of masks, unidentified men in unidentified vehicles coming up into a neighborhood and just grabbing people and throwing them into a vehicle, like being kidnapped and thrown into private for-profit detention centers. And this is creating tremendous fear, not just among the undocumented immigrant population, but even among people who have become U.S. citizens. Because if you speak with an accent, if you look like a foreigner, you could be just picked up on the street. So there is a lot of organizing happening in neighborhoods to try to protect people. But people in the immigrant community are very scared. Scared to go out of their houses, scared to take their children to school, scared to even go to the immigration office when they are being called because they could be picked up there. So there is an atmosphere of fear, both in the immigrant community and the pro-Palestine community. People are being visited by the FBI. I have had many calls by the FBI and questioned by the FBI. But I have more protection than immigrant people do that are being questioned. Many people I know are leaving the U.S. now because they are afraid. And so we think that it's a situation that's going to get worse before it gets better. But we do see that there is a lot of fight back happening. Not enough, and certainly not enough in the Democratic Party, but outside the party system, people are organizing and they're fighting back. And I think we have enough people and enough strength and conviction among many people in the United States and some good courts, some good judges that are ruling against what Trump is doing, that we can save ourselves from the fascist trend that is happening now.
Merci Médée, on vous souhaite bien du courage dans votre lutte. Merci à vous et merci pour votre temps.
Thank you so much.